And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Well, for the second time this week, Drancer, I kind of feel like I have to lead off the VanCast with, who needs games? Like, we just came through a week where the Canucks didn't play, and in our last VanCast, we had all sorts of stuff to chew on, and certainly the news cycle heating up here in the last 24 or 48 hours. The Thatcher Demko deal, we'll certainly get to that, but we got to start with the fact that a game wasn't played, that COVID has touched down now in the camp of the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and I mean, you'd call this an outbreak at this point, right? We're definitely up to three confirmed positives among Canucks players and coaches. Adam Gaudette was tested on Monday. That test came back positive. He was pulled off the ice on Tuesday. On Wednesday, the club, having everyone on Tuesday, took their tests. Those tests were clear, so everyone took the ice, a totally normal skate on that Wednesday. And then at 5:30, the club expedited tests, came back positive. Tests from Wednesday revealed that there were at least two more Canucks who'd, presumptive positives, presumably, because they've been added to the protocol. So for now, all we know is that two more players and or personnel, and the NHL specified that a member of the coaching staff and a player have been added to the COVID protocol. Clearly, those are presumptive positives at this point. And we'll see. Like, there were some rumors about maybe another player last night. I checked in with some sources and they sort of hadn't heard, but this is moving so quickly that I don't even know that means the info's bad, we'll just have to wait and see. But hopefully at this point, the spread is contained, that there's no additional positive tests among the club. And it's hard to see how, they're not going to be off for another stretch here, probably as much as a week, maybe a little more. And, that's tough. Like, that's really tough. They're going to have a compressed schedule when they come back. And more than that, just let's hope that no one gets their ass kicked too badly here and that everyone's able to, recover fully from these symptoms, that nothing lingers. Hopefully everyone's asymptomatic, right? but this is a tough, tough blow. And, an indication of how difficult this season's going to be, especially in Canada, right? Like, early in the season, you had all of the American teams dealing with shutdowns. And now we've seen with the Habs and the Canucks, like, this has come north of the border. And this has come north of the border in part because, increasingly America is vaccinated. Plus, you've had a higher rate of infections throughout the pandemic. So you've got a much larger natural immunity down there, right? Up here, the variants are running wild. In British Columbia, we just hit over 1,000 cases in a day for the first time in, I think, ever. Yeah. And, that's sort of creating an inverse environment. Like, it's inverted from what we saw during the second wave in the winter, where, in fact, these Canadian teams are likely to be much more vulnerable considering where they're living and how they're living and how they sort of occupy space and time in a community that's now, experiencing exponential growth. And, I understand vaccine politics being what they are, but to me, it doesn't make a ton of sense. And in fact, speaks to competitive integrity. Like, we've seen now Vegas and Tampa, like, two contenders are basically majority vaccinated now, right? it doesn't make sense to me why the NHL couldn't procure 350 jabs to accommodate 7 NHL bubbles up here. Like, privately procure 350 J&J jabs so it's one shot each and just vaccinate the Canadian teams. Like, to me, it's a competitive integrity issue, especially as we get into a world where, you know, the American teams are vaccinated, the Canadian teams are not. And now going down the stretch, like, if you're Toronto or Winnipeg or Edmonton or a team with legit aspirations to, you know, get through the Canadian division and take your shot, like, aren't you at a disadvantage relative to a team that's mostly vaccinated? It doesn't make sense to me that they wouldn't be able to do that. Obviously, I get that there's bigger fish to fry. Public health matters a ton, but it just seems so strange. And that's sort of what we're going to be coping with here down the stretch, especially in this country, as a result of a slow vax rollout.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, BC crests 1,000 new cases for the first time ever this week. And really not a surprise that this spike comes on the heels of 2 weeks of spring break for school kids and families that, you know, weren't supposed to be going away, but, you know, we saw the reports of ski hills all over the province and people were there. Like, I'm not surprised that we're sort of back where we are. I guess I wanted to believe that the Canucks had, you know, skated quite literally to this point, other than at the very outset of the season. But look, COVID doesn't care if you're a professional hockey player and if you've got a game scheduled for 7:30 on a given night. It is going to take its course. And you know, I believe that, like, these players have followed the protocols as best they can to get to this point of the season. But here we are now. And so it's a question of where does it go from here, as you talked about. You know, we'll wait and see. And we should point out as well, as we record this on Thursday morning, we're dealing with the information that we have. We understand that by the time you listen to this podcast, perhaps there will be developments. We may have heard from the Canucks or the league, but just keep that in mind that we're dealing with what we know as we record this. And I really want to go back 48 hours to sort of where this all started, because when we recorded on Monday, the Canucks had a day off and they had practiced on Saturday and Sunday in the middle of this week off between games. They had Monday as a team day off. We're getting back to practice on Tuesday. You were at the rink on Tuesday to watch them practice. It was Travis Boyd's first practice. That was something to keep an eye on. You were documenting, you know, how they were handling him and where he might slot into the lineup. And then pick up the story from there, because, you know, if it wasn't for you sitting way up high in level 5 on practice day Tuesday and detecting that Adam Gaudette had left the playing surface, we may not have known anything about Gaudette and the fact that COVID had struck for another 24 hours. Like, we wouldn't have known until the team assembled on Wednesday for its game day skate that Gaudette was missing, at which point questions would have been asked. But just take us back to practice on Tuesday.
Well, and I'll take everyone back to practice in general. Like, this is such a weird hockey season for us, right? For, I mean, obviously, but certainly in terms of the experience of watching practice and morning skates. And, you know, we can't talk to anyone at the rink. It's not like we come to the rink and hang out, you know, together. First of all, we're all socially distanced. Secondly, a lot of media aren't coming at all, because it's not like you can go into the locker room and do things of value. You do it all on Zoom anyway. You're not getting a huge benefit from being there. Well, the one thing you're getting, and I'm obstinate about this, is you're getting line rushes and you're able to observe, right? And I live in fear. This is why I went to every game in the bubble too, right? Like, I live in fear of a player, you know, getting hit by a puck or something happening at a practice that really matters. And I'm not there to see it, or the Athletic's not there to see it. So I'm obstinate. I'm at every morning skate and every practice. I took the practices over the weekend off because I was away in Pemberton, but made sure Harm was there. You know, I'm really stubborn about being there. I just think it matters to have lines, to have, you know, what's going on at practice, to have an understanding of what the team's working on. And I think it helps drive daily conversations. So, you know, a lot of the time I'm functioning essentially as a pool reporter for the rest of our scene, especially since 1040 shuttered. And very, very regularly, you know, there just isn't anyone at the rink aside from myself, sometimes Kevin Woodley, usually at morning skates, but he's really focused on the goalies. And sometimes, like, Sportsnet has a camera, or Dan Murphy will be in the corner or what have you. But it's really, like, we're talking less than five. We're talking less than five bodies in the stands at most practices and morning skates. And then everyone jumps in on Zoom. So on Tuesday's practice, coming off a break, I was the only reporter there. Like, it's just me. And I didn't see Gaudette get pulled off the ice. I just noticed that PP2 was missing him. And they were missing Jake, too. So, you know, like, Brock Besser came the length of the ice and took a couple shifts with PP2. I thought that was strange. And I waited. And then I confirmed with Canucks PR that Gaudette had left the ice. And then I confirmed with Canucks management source that Gaudette hadn't been traded. And then I tweeted out that Gaudette was missing, right? And then I asked Travis Green about it. And Travis Green explained the whole thing, that Gaudette had a positive test and on, and he spelled it out. He was on the ice, he left the ice, he got pulled off after we got the positive test, da-da-da. So that now it's on Zoom and it's in the public record. But the only reason we had it was, you know, that we were there, that I was there. And, you know, more than anything, it just reflects how quickly this sports media market has changed. And we'll discuss and get into this a little bit more tomorrow too. But, you know, we're down a lot of bodies. We're down a lot of manpower and a lot of resources. And I did just want to note to the VIPs, to our subscribers, to our loyal listeners, like, it's because of your support that the Athletic has the resources to have multiple bodies who are able to be there. And we always try. Like, you know, it takes something really remarkable for us not to have someone at a Canucks practice to observe it. And, you know, I think this week's a really good example of the value that we're providing, in that, you know, at least we were able to see this coming. At least we had a sense before Wednesday morning that there was a COVID concern internally with the Canucks. Ultimately, unfortunately, that seems to have spread and gotten to the point that Wednesday's game was canceled. But, you know, it matters. Like, it matters to have boots on the ground. It matters to have eyeballs on practice. And it's our subscribers, their commitment to us, that enables us to do it. And I just wanted to thank everybody and note that, because I think it, you know, I think it's an important part of, you know, the value that we can provide subscribers, and also, you know, what we're able to do as a result of our subscription base.
Now, I also want to take a second here, and just because it goes hand in hand, and this has nothing to do with COVID, but Tuesday's practice, Virtanen wasn't there, and we found out after the fact that he wasn't feeling well, and they told him to stay home, which is the prudent play through all of this. But it seemed to me that filled your timeline with trade. I guess we're at that point in time here, like 10 days out from the trade deadline. A guy who has been talked about ad nauseum in this market is missing from practice. It has to be trade.
Yeah, well, trade, trade, trade. And then Gaudette leaves the ice in the same thing. And I joked that it was a seagull call. And I think that's right, right? It's just like, trade, trade, trade. Like, we're all just sort of chasing the breadcrumb. Yeah, I mean, that, you know, the Virtanen thing's interesting to me because, you know, he made a really mature call, right? Like, you have the sniffles, you stay home. That's been me this season. I've missed, just to let everyone know, I've missed two games this season because I woke up with a sore throat or the sniffles, and I've, you know, called my editor, called Harmon, and sometimes called Patrick and been like, hey, look, I can't come today. Go get tested. Test comes back negative. Wait till my symptoms subside and reemerge in the rink. But I don't want to be the guy who infects the media pool. You know, we're socially distanced. I don't think there's a ton of risk of spread with how we're set up at the game, but there's enough of a risk that I'm taking it seriously. But for hockey players, like, how many times do you think Jake Virtanen's played through sprains and bumps and skates right that barely fit on his feet? You know,
suck it up and play.
Totally. And that's always been everyone's ethos, right? Yep. Like, that's been the hockey ethos. It requires a serious reorientation of everyone's paradigm. And you know, not just Virtanen, but Virtanen calls, you know, the coach or whomever, hey, I'm not feeling well today. And then you also need the coach to understand and be like, good for you, thank you, stay home. You know, like, because usually a coach would be like, you have the fucking sniffles? Like, go block a shot, you know? Go eat some Benadryl and then go eat some Pox, right? Like, but it's a different world and a different way that people have to conduct themselves. Virtanen deserves credit for that, in my view. You know, that's just something I want to note here too, because it matters and it's so different. It's such a departure from how NHL players have conducted business and how teams have conducted business for years and years up until now.
Can we look at that as Jake's first assist of the season?
Well, no, I'm reluctant now. We had a VanCast episode last week where I carved Jake's performance against, was it the Winnipeg? Yeah, it was against
it
Winnipeg.
Had to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I go out to the dog park and end up hanging out with him for 25 minutes. And he was really nice to my dog, and I came home and I was like, oh, I'm a jackass. So yeah, I mean, anyway, so it goes.
Now, we should point out as well, and I tweeted this yesterday, because people have heard us say, like, we generally try to avoid game day podcasts, but with 3 a week now, there will be some days where we have no choice, and we were planning to record Wednesday morning. And this is obviously in the wake of Tuesday's practice on Gaudette leaving, and your spidey senses were right. You called off the dogs, if you will, and you said, you know what, I've got the sense. Let's push this to Thursday just on the off chance that this game isn't going to go. Now, we could have pumped out a pod and it would have lived all day. I mean, the decision wasn't made till about 5:30, but still, in hindsight, you were right. So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, and you know, once I showed up for morning skate and it was completely normal, right? I mean, I was on 6:50 yesterday, and I noted that until puck drop, like, we were still going to be tracking this closely. But I also felt pretty good about the likelihood that spread had been contained, especially with, you know, an understanding that if there had been any indication that this was a variant, the league would have conducted themselves very differently as of Wednesday morning, right? Like, the team would not have masked to skate if this was a variant. I was, you know, hopeful based on that, based on how things had gone ahead, based on the fact that everyone else was clear that, you know, in fact, there was, you know, reason to believe that it had been contained to just one. But yeah, I mean, things move so quickly. Things are so unpredictable. And it's why, you know, we now have two players and an additional staffer in the protocol now. And, you know, for 48 to 72 hours now, from, like, maybe even longer, I'm just going to be waiting, watching, and hopeful that what happened to the Buffalo Sabres earlier on in this season, where they end up with like half their roster on the COVID protocol list, you know, isn't replicated up here. Like that doesn't happen, that this is, you know, this stops where it is. But I don't think we know that for sure. I don't think we can know that for sure. And I think that certainly not at the time of this recording. And I definitely think there's some, you know, concern internally in the meantime that, you know, until there stops being additional positives produced, this is a dicey situation and one that, you know, has to be, everyone has to proceed with significant trepidation and caution here until, you know, we have a sense that the spread's been contained and that this is limited to who it's limited to. And, you know, then we'll figure out what the schedule looks like, what the rest of the Canucks season looks like. But looks like they're going to get some time off here, and that's necessary because you can't be spreading this around between the other Canadian teams, especially in a world where, you know, at least if the current regime prevails in terms of vaccine politics, like, the rest of this season and into the playoffs is going to have to be played without vaccinated players.
All right, so still a ton of uncertainty as far as what's next for the Vancouver Canucks, when we'll see them next. I know that the Calgary Flames have moved on. They've got a game in Edmonton. So if people thought somehow that the game was just going to be rescheduled here tonight or the next night, that's not going to happen. Now, logistically, it's easier to get Calgary back to Vancouver than for Edmonton to have to go back to Montreal after what happened to the Canadiens last week. So we'll see how it all plays out. The Canucks are supposed to now be heading out on a 7-game road trip that starts in Edmonton on Saturday. We spent a fair bit on the last pod talking about the prescribed loss game in Winnipeg on the Sunday night because they were going to go back-to-back here. We'll see if this weekend happens at all. And then they're into sets of two in Winnipeg, two in Calgary, and they finish up with two in Edmonton. So that's the road trip for the Canucks. Of course, the trade deadline is in there as well. So a ton of unknowns, a ton of variables, and obviously we'll continue to chart this on future podcasts, but...
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, let's get into the Demko thing, because talk about something that came out of nowhere. Like, there were reports earlier in the week that in this week of non-game action that Jim Benning had reached out to the Tanner Pearson camp. He had made contact with Thatcher Demko's representative, but look, I mean, we've been charting this storyline all season. The taps have been turned off at Rogers Arena. Travis Green has had to work without a contract. His staff, we know all of these things. And I guess most people just thought that there was a logical progression that, you know, whenever they got around to contracts, it would be Pettersson and Hughes, and then we would sort of see what was left over for anybody else that needed a new deal. And yet, from reaching out to Demko's camp to the conclusion of a 5x5 deal for a 25-year-old goaltender who has made 59 career NHL starts, I didn't see it coming. I did not see it coming on a lot of levels. And there are, you know, there are a lot of spinoffs from this. I mean, what does it mean? What does it mean for the spending habits of the hockey club? Obviously, what does it mean for Ian Clark? What does it mean for some of these other guys that are going to be at the trough waiting for theirs as well? But let's just start with the deal itself. I get there's always going to be risk. I get that. I like this deal from the Vancouver Canucks perspective. I like the fact that Thatcher Demko is committing to this group longer term than maybe I thought that he would. I like the fact that he has progressed the way you kind of want your top prospects to, and, you know, did everything he could at the college level and then made the jump to pro and started to emerge as, you know, the player that they hoped he would be in Utica, and then decided, took his time under Jacob Markstrom working with Ian Clark. And when he was thrust in action in the playoffs, we know what happened with Bubble Demko. And we've seen this season unfold. Again, the body of work isn't huge. The term did surprise me a little bit, but I think if you're going to bet on somebody, I'm conditioned in this market to the Canucks throwing these kind of dollars and that kind of term to guys that are 30 or 31. So if you're going to bet on somebody, bet on a 25-year-old, bet on a guy that's going to make up sort of the backbone of your hockey club. And we have certainly seen flashes, and just the way that he has emerged this year as the true legit number one here in Vancouver. I think that the Canucks are certainly banking on that being the case for the 5-year duration of this contract. So it's not without its risk. I understand that totally. But again, I think when, you know, Brock Besser took a bridge deal, we're expecting that Pettersson and Hughes are going to go the bridge route. Bo Horvat got a long-term deal before this core was even a thing. So Horvat committed long-term. But I think there's some value in getting some cost certainty at the goaltending position. I know in the short term, especially with Holpe next year and the Luongo recapture, you're up over $12 million at the goaltending position. But when you get through that, and we were told 2 years by the general manager, you're going to have some cost certainty at the most important position on the ice for a hockey club.
Yeah. So look, I get it. I mean, I get it from a Canucks perspective. You know, for them, they're familiar with Demko, right? Demko is relatively young in his Canucks or NHL career, but he's been in their system for 7 years. Like, this is a player they know well and have clearly believed in for a long time, right? A lot of their actions speak to that, including limiting the term on the contract of the free agent goaltender that they brought in to, you know, provide some veteran reinforcement after Markstrom departed, right? Like, Demko was a key reason why the Canucks were so intent on making sure that whatever goalie they brought in to replace Markstrom only went for 2 years, right? Like, they weren't doing a 3-year deal like Talbot or Hudobin got. That was a key factor. So clearly they've believed in Demko for a long time. Obviously a standout in college, standout in the AHL. And the organization believes strongly that over his 60 NHL starts, he's shown signs of being able and capable of dominating games. Inarguably. He's inarguably done that. Obviously, you can point to his work ethic. You can point to his coachability. you can point to his unflappability, right? Like, I've had some people in my mentions describe Demko as a, you know, a fiery competitor. And it's just like, you've never dealt with Demko. Like, Demko's, I'm not saying he's not a super competitive guy. I'm just saying the way that it's expressed externally, at least as far as I've seen and from what I can tell, is he's more a guy without a pulse, right? Than he is, you know, a Markstrom style fiery competitor.
Totally.
Obviously the club chose him over going long with Markstrom, and I don't think that that's, it can't be understated that that was a factor in the Canucks walking away from Markstrom. And people love to point to the 6x6 or whatever, but it's like, that didn't need to be what Markstrom signed for. You know what I mean? Like, I think the club was really reluctant to go even five years. I mean, not 5 million on Markstrom. Like, I think they were super rigorous in not lowballing, but having a certain walkaway price that was relatively low in Markstrom negotiations, playing hardball and sticking to it. And I do ultimately think that's why Markstrom departed, even though his preference was to remain in Vancouver, all things being equal, just because the Alberta teams blew the Canucks' hardline position out of the water. And look, this organization needs to draw lines in the sand and stick to them in contract talks with a variety of key players in the years ahead. I always thought the Markstrom departure was underplayed for its importance in this market. Like, I thought in the offseason, people really accepted that, like, Holtby Demko would just sort of offset where Markstrom sort of what Markstrom provided. No problem. And as it's turned out, actually, the Canucks have got better goaltending than the Calgary Flames. But that's largely been driven by Demko's ridiculous month of March, right? I don't think there's any doubt that in January and February, like, if this team had had a Markstrom-Demko tandem, I think we're looking at a very different North Division standing. So, I'm not fully walking back that analysis. Anyway, ultimately, the organization feels confident that Demko will outperform the long-term money they give him because of all the reasons that I've specified: the familiarity, their belief in his makeup, their belief in his coachability. And finally, and this is a really important point. If you go 2 years with Demko and buy out both of his arbitration-eligible RFA seasons, you're probably still looking at a $3.5 to $3.8 million valuation on those years. If you go 3 years, you're probably looking at $4.42, right? He was going to beat Jerry, almost certainly. Or he was going to go to arbitration, and you don't really want to go to arbitration with a guy who clearly the organization's come to see as a core piece. So, you know, in a world where your options are like 2x3.8 or 3x4.2 or 5x5, like, five's not a, you know, do you prefer the extra $800K to spend on your fourth line or 1.2 to spend on your third line? Or do you prefer to just lock up a guy you believe in, right? The gap there is relatively narrow. And from an organization standpoint, I think that was a key part in driving a long-term bet. Now, all of that said, I think it's a huge risky bet. Here's my concerns. I've got three major ones. The first one I'll start with is process. Two weeks ago, we saw Francesco Aquilini tweet out, what goaltending we're getting, right? This organization, like, we know how reluctant this club has been to spend money. Right? We know that.
Completely.
Two weeks ago, we see the owner tweet out what goaltending we're getting. And then 7 days ago, negotiations between Demko's representatives at Edge Hockey, it's Jordan Newman, and the Canucks heat up, and the deal's done, and it's a long-term deal today. That begs some really serious questions about, like, who's making these decisions, frankly, right? And to what extent the club's budgetary priorities are being set by, an owner as opposed to a hockey ops group, right? Like, that begs some really uncomfortable questions and some ones that I'm uncomfortable for, like, it almost uncomfortable with. Like, it almost makes me wonder, like, to what extent is this club making significant hockey bets based on, the opinions of like a fan who's clearly got bad takes based on his Twitter account. And I like that should worry everybody. Frankly, I honestly think that's massively worrying. The second thing that I don't love about the deal is $5 million. So $5 million puts you in the top 12, like of goaltending cap hits beginning next season. When you get to that $5 million or above range, like the only guys making more than $5 million per based on AAV next season anyway, are like Vezina nominees and Stanley Cup winning starters and John Gibson, who's unbelievably good, right? That's it. That's it. So Demko's now being paid like a top end starter, like a top of the line starter. And that to me means that he needs to perform that way for the next 5 years to justify this deal. Like the upside of this bet requires Demko to be at an extremely high level consistently for the next 5 seasons. That to me is just like, it limits your ability to get surplus value because you're paying him what certainly through the flat cap era is going to be market price for a top of the line starter. We've seen him be a top of the line starter for 6 weeks, but just 6 weeks, right? Like we haven't seen him do that consistently. And in fact, last year when he got his first sort of was thrown into the fire after Markstrom's injury, he struggled in that role. Maybe we're seeing growth from him. I don't want to use exponential growth, but maybe we're seeing some growth in his game. But, you know, the floor of the bet is really high, and he has to perform at a really high level to justify the bet, basically. I don't like bets like that. Like, I like bets with a floor that I feel a little more comfortable with. Like, worst case scenario, I'm still going to get decent value, right? For me, that's why a shorter deal would have made more sense. Just because if you get Demko, like, even if you get Demko at 2 years times 3.5, like, that takes you through, and this sort of segues into my third point. So I'm actually going to stop. But the term of the bet, like, I think they would have been better off limiting term because the floor that they've now set that Demko has to hop over to even just justify this deal is now set really high. The bar is really high for this promising, exceptionally talented young goaltender. The third point is, you know, this bet enunciates, perhaps even more clearly than Jim Benning's, you know, in 2 years, I think we'll take that step that we want, comment from his, you know, mid-season media availability a couple months back. More clearly than that, it suggests that this team's eyes are now focused on the future. And so what they're doing with this deal, like this deal for an additional cap surcharge effectively this year and next, Demko's two remaining RFA seasons, they're buying three UFA years from him in which, you know, his cap hit will be relatively restrained, especially in the event that his development and progress continues at pace, right? Like, as I said, I think it would have been somewhere between 3.5 and 3.8 on a 2-year deal. But if he'd continued to play really well, then you're looking at 7 or 8 million thereafter, right? You're right. Looking at making him really expensive. So you're protecting your back end, but you're cashing out, you're paying a surcharge for the next 2 years. Well, the next 2 years, like, you've got Besser expiring after next season, and then you've got Miller and Horvat expiring the year after, right? So you're paying a surcharge during these years in which three of your five core guys outside of goal are, you know, cost controlled anyway through those seasons. Like, to me, it doesn't make a ton of sense with how the Canucks are positioned to be paying that surcharge, especially considering the flat cap, right? Like, the timing of it doesn't make a ton of sense. I like going long on Demko, but it feels divorced from the rest of Vancouver's position. If they had sold aggressively at the deadline and a week later done this deal, and by sold aggressively, I include like Tyler Mott, Tanner Pearson. Like if everything had been done and they'd said, hey, we're looking at really landing and opening a competitive, like a durable cup window from 2022-23 through to 2026-27. Like, that's our 5-year window. We're going to go for it. We're going to try and get Hughes and Pettersson done long-term. Like, we're going to try and set everything up so that we have a 4 or 5 year runway to really compete and win a cup. And Demko's part of that. Then that makes sense to me. But to do this deal now with how everything else is positioned, like, it just, it seems discordant. And that concerns me too. Like, that doesn't feel like the start or the continued evolution of a plan. It just feels like Demko had a hot month and the owner wanted to lock him up now, and they did. And that to me, like, that's just not how teams win in this league. That's not how you win with reactive moves like that. That's just kind of what it looks like to me or feels like. Now, I need to do a little more work to see, admittedly, I need to do a little more work to see how much this is the case. The Canucks wouldn't even confirm this deal, even after Francesco sent his tweet yesterday. So, you know, I'm still sort of at the start of figuring out some of the background. I do know that it came together quickly, and the whole thing smells like that to me. Like, that's what it looks like. But, you know, this is not me reporting, like, Francesco drove this deal. This is just what it looks like and feels like based on the public record and, you know, my sort of informed understanding of how this organization works. To me, it just looks odd. Like, it just doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like part of a whole. It feels like a singular bet on a really promising, good player with relatively low upside over the life of the deal. And so, yeah, I don't love that bet without reservation. I don't hate it either. I just think that the clear-eyed sort of full picture view makes it look a little bit more dicey than the public reaction would suggest.
And I hear you loud and clear on the surcharge up front. Like, next year, I think we've all come to the conclusion that it's going to be a struggle for the Canucks to be a whole lot better next year. And, you know, whatever wriggle room we thought they had, now they've devoted even more than most people anticipated to this one player. And that's before we know, you know, the final costs on both Pettersson and Hughes. But it also, it would seem to me, like, you know, I know Darren Dreger reported that talks were heating up with the Pearson camp. Like, I don't see it. I don't know. And I've been in the trade Tanner Pearson camp for a while. Like, I fear sort of his foot speed and where the game is going and what's he going to look like if they lock him up to 2 or 3 years. So I'd be in the trade now. But I just, like, so I hear you. And I think this just kind of, you never want to say a throwaway year because that's not fair to the players that are out there playing the game. But I don't know, like, even if you want Demko to continue to develop next year, obviously, you want him to continue to develop for the 5 years of this deal, but even if he's lights out, like, we've seen what lights out goaltending has done for the Canucks. It's helped them stabilize things, but it's not been enough, obviously, to get them where they need to be, and so I don't know what next year's going to look like with that much money tied up in the goaltending position, but this deal's done, and you know, now we move forward and see how it all plays out, the trade deadline and beyond. What surprised you the most in this? Was it sort of the timing? Was it the order? There's talk that the Canucks prioritized Demko, which I thought was an interesting term. Like, how do you prioritize anybody ahead of Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes? But, like, again, maybe it speaks to what you mentioned with the owner. We're not sure who's prioritizing things, you know, in the front office for the Vancouver Canucks. But what sort of surprised you the most in the fact that this announcement came down 5 hours before what was supposed to be puck drop yesterday?
The term, for sure. By far, the term surprised me the most. I thought the Canucks would have preferred to go relatively short because everything else about their positioning suggests that a short-term deal maximizes your flex and sort of like a 3-year deal sort of gets you through your flat cap years. And if you have to pay Demko on the other side of that, like, you're probably happy to do it because it means you've gotten elite goaltending for 3 years. You know, even Jim Benning's 2 years in, you know, not next season, but the one after comment to me speaks to sort of an incentive to keep costs relatively restrained for guys like Demko, Pettersson, Hughes through that year, because then you've got Miller and Horvat at like 10 and a bit combined. You know, Brock will be on his next deal, which isn't super convenient, but nonetheless, like, that's the year where Luongo's hit disappears and Erickson and Beagle and Roussel and Holtby, right? Like, that's 20 additional million in cap space. And if you are locking up shorter term deals for Dem with smaller AAVs for Demko, Hughes, Pettersson, like, you have sort of an all-in year kind of built in there. But overall, just like overall, the Canucks' cap positioning and the logic of the Hughes-Pettersson ELCs and everything suggested that like last year, this year, and next were sort of the beginning, the opening of a window. You know, I throw in Hoglander and Podkolzin on ELCs too, right? Like those are guys who you might credibly hope to contribute meaningfully in a 2022-23 season. Or sorry, 2022-23 season. The last of Horvat, like I just thought it would be based on their positioning. I thought, and Jim's comments, I thought that was a year that made sense to go for it. The Demko deal doesn't necessarily throw that plan out the window. It's only $1 million or $1.5 million additional cap hit for that season. But, you know, they have sort of reset the paradigm, I think, in that, you know, if you're locking up your core now for longer term, if you're going to build in some cost certainty runway, like, I'd just like to see that be consistent with everything else you do, especially in the efficiency contest that is a salary-capped league, right? Like, everything you do needs to be sort of driving toward the same end, or you're not going to be able to keep up with the teams that are being more disciplined about it. Like, so anyway, that's just my view of it. But yeah, that was what surprised me the most. And then on the Demko side, too, like, the flat cap ends in 3 years and Demko delivers, right? Say Demko delivers insanely, like is a Vezina candidate multiple seasons over the life of this deal. He's going to miss out on signing the deal that he might've wanted to, or been able to sign like 10 million plus in a world where the cap goes up 3 years from now, right? Like I'm just surprised that a 5-year deal made sense for either side. Right. So yeah, that's sort of overall how I look at it. I'm a little bit surprised in general, just by the term and not just from a Canucks perspective, but also from Demko's camp.
Demko's young enough though that I mean he could get the Markstrom contract when this deal's done. Like this will take him to I think he'll turn 31 in the year that this contract expires. So he'll turn 26 in December. And so there's still another big contract waiting for him if he becomes that goaltender that he believes he can and clearly that the Canucks do as well.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
What about like the coaching staff now? I mean, the Ian Clark angle to all this, but if you're Travis Green, like this team hasn't spent a dollar, Tom, since they signed Travis Hamonic a week before training camp opened. And we followed the Travis Green story and, you know, he's said all the right things when he's been asked about it, but he has been asked to coach into the final year of a contract that's now 19 games from expiring. And sort of the explanation always was finances and no ticket sales and wait and see. Like, if you're Travis Green, and I know the Demko deal doesn't kick in until next year, but... like,
but neither would Travis's.
Fair enough, right. So, if you're Travis Green, like, do you not have... not that he's not going to be upset that Thatcher Demko's getting his, but does he have any right, do you think, to kind of wonder, like, why this player and why not prioritize others in the organization?
I mean, I think so. I think for sure.
Yeah,
but
so
but also more than that, the more direct, like, go look at the responses to Francesco's tweet confirming the Demko deal. And I'd say 60% of them are, so now do Ian Clark. Clark right. Spelt incorrectly with an E at the end, right? Yep. And so, you know, the logic, though, is like you can't really lock up assistants and a goalie coach until you've made a decision on a head coach. You know, I think hockey operations... has always believed in Travis. So, you know, I do think there's been some holdup there from the ownership suite down. And you kind of got to lock up. Like, why are you not, if you're extending Demko, who's reached his potential under Clark's tutelage, like, get Clark done too, right? Like, what are we talking about? Like, why are you risking something that's worked so well to this point? It seems odd. Like, maybe you just let Clark jump the line and lock him up, treat him like a Benoit Lair who's gone through a million head coaches with a variety of different franchises. Or, you know, get Green done and move down to his assistants and get Clark locked up. But clearly this Demko deal throws into stark relief the fact that this well-heralded goalie coach with a tremendous record working with, you know, Bobrovsky and Markstrom and, you know, Demko too, right? Like, getting the most out of guys who've gone on to struggle once they've moved away from him, right? Get that guy locked up too, clearly. And so, yeah, I do think in some ways the Demko deal shines a spotlight on the status of Green and his staff and principally in Clark. And the fact that, you know, it continues to be a little bit mystifying that there hasn't been a decision made one way or the other there.
Well, there's a lot to sort of figure out here in the short term and obviously long term for the Vancouver Canucks, and we'll see what the latest developments are. It's heading into this Easter weekend. I know that for many, Friday will be a quiet day. Not for us, though. We're in the three-pod a week era now here at the VanCast, and so we're going to be back at it with the latest developments on the Vancouver Canucks. Maybe by Friday morning, we'll know what the schedule looks like. We'll have a better sense of who has come down, who's contracted the coronavirus, and anything else that we get into. Plus, should we let the people know?
I think about let the people know.
Sure, we're welcoming our friends, our new neighbors in the pod world.
Yes, yes,
it's like a block party.
It is. We're gonna have Sakaris and Price on the show on Friday. We're really looking forward to it. I'm thinking we do a deep dive, too, into changes in the Vancouver sports media landscape, the evolution of our industry. We'll obviously talk some Canucks. We'll talk some deadline. We'll talk some COVID protocols, all that good stuff, and also COVID protocols when we meet with Sakaris and Price on Friday. And, you know, looks like you'll be contributing to their show. I suspect I'll be contributing to their show, and we'll both be contributing at 6:50, too, eh, Jeff?
Options abound. Yes, that's the world we live in now. And hopefully we have more hockey games to talk about, because the hockey games themselves, while they may not mean a ton anymore with 19 to go, they still drive the conversation. And I wanted to see Travis Boyd in a Canuck uniform. I wanted to see more of Jimmy Vesey. I mean, these are decisions that the Canucks have to make, but in order to make those decisions, they need some games. They need a body of work to judge. So again, we'll find out when they will play again, but sort of bracing now that we may not see them on the ice for a little while because of this COVID outbreak. That'll do it for this edition of the VanCast. If you're looking for other pod options here at the Athletic, there are many. Glenn Healy, the executive director of the NHL Alumni, spends the full 60 with Craig Custance Thursday at the Athletic, so you can check that out. And we always tell you, check out our comments section for each podcast episode at the Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple. And if you're not already a subscriber and you're listening in the United States, go to theathletic.com/VanCast. If you're listening to us in Canada, go to theathletic.com/VanCastCanada and receive a subscription for just $1 a month. I mentioned Harm and his piece on the Demko deal. Harm also had another terrific piece on the reaction of players to being traded. And as I started to read it, I thought, oh, cool, you got JT Miller. He was just getting warmed up with JT Miller, though. He talked to a lot of people, a lot of players around the NHL who have been dealt throughout their career. It was a good read. It was a fun read.
Yeah, really, really great work by Harmon. Awesome. Like, the Connor Carrick stories, the real estate stories, like, tremendous. just well worth your time. Go check it out at The Athletic.
All right, that's going to do it for now. We'll reconvene on Friday. Good Friday. Hey, it's a good Friday for you. You're getting a bonus pod. Our third of the week for Drancer. It's Jay Pat. As always, thanks for listening to the VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.